Today on Dana's Low Carb for Life, we have the Easter candy roundup, learn what a risk factor really is, have some more low carb history, and more low carb voices, so stick around. You are listening to Dana's Low Carb for Life. Hey gang, welcome to episode 11 of Dana's Low Carb for Life. I'm still not up and running to do Skype interviews again yet, and I'm learning part of why it is that interviews are so popular. It's really hard to write a half-hour show all by myself. Still, I live but to serve, so I hope you'll like what I've got for you this week. I do warn you, by the way, that I did a dumb thing today. It was the first spring day, nice enough that I could open up all the windows in my house, so I ran the overdue clean cycle on my oven. And my house ended up full of smoke, smelling very much like a barbecue gone terribly wrong. And now my throat is very, very irritated. So if I start losing my voice, you know why. Okay, here's what's in store this week. You've probably noticed all those foil-wrapped bunnies and eggs and things growing in your local grocery store and convenience store and Walmart and drugstore and all of those. So I thought it was time that we had a little talk about Easter candy. We're going to run down just exactly how treacherous the most popular Easter candies are, and I'm going to suggest some alternatives that will be easier on your blood sugar. Now, we're also going to talk a bit about what the term risk factor really means. We hear this term a lot, so it's important to understand just exactly what risk factor means and what it doesn't mean. I also have what I find a fascinating look at diet history, in specific, some of the fad diets of the 1960s. It's an interesting time because, well, at least for those of us who are interested in dieting and nutrition, because diets were still straddling a line then between the relatively new idea of caloric restriction and the time-honored idea of cutting carbs. So we're going to take a little look at that. Plus, once again, we have low-carb voices, so you're going to want to stick around. But first, I want to get to the lowdown on the latest seasonal sugar landmine. Why is it that the holiest festivals of Christianity have all become culture-wide sugar fests? Why is that? I know for a fact that millions of people who never darken a church doorstep from year's end to year's end still pig out on Christmas cookies and candy canes every year, and I'm betting that a whole lot of those folks are also busily snarfing down chocolate eggs, cream-filled eggs, peanut butter-filled eggs, jelly beans, peeps, all that stuff. Look, guys, it's a church festival and a junk food marketing opportunity. Not to mention all the obvious pagan symbolism involved in the bunnies and the eggs and all of that, but that's a chat for a whole different podcast. Anyway, that's the end of the rant. Let's talk a little bit about the various Easter candies and their comparative evilness. Milk chocolate is probably the single most ubiquitous, and it's actually among the least problematic of the popular Easter candies. Do not take this to mean that the stuff is, however, innocuous. It is not. Just 1 ounce of milk chocolate has 145 calories with 17 grams of carb and only 1 gram of fiber. That's 16 grams of usable carb. I don't know about you, but most of my meals have a lower carb count than that. Indeed, many of my days have a lower carb count than that. Here's some more useful information. You know those little foil-wrapped chocolate eggs, the ones my mom and dad always used to hide for me to look for Easter morning? Yeah, those little chocolate eggs run about 1/4 ounce apiece, so 4 of them will add up to 16 grams of usable carb. Yeah, kind of scary for something so small, huh? You love those Cadbury cream eggs? I have some very bad news for you. The cream filling is mostly sugar, and just 1 of those suckers has 135 calories with 28 grams of carbohydrate, 25 of which are pure sugar. Since sugar runs 4 grams of carb to the teaspoon, that means that each cream egg has more than 6 teaspoons of sugar in it. Ouch. Then there's the Reese's peanut butter eggs. I was heavily addicted to the Reese's peanut butter eggs when I was an adolescent. They are somewhat better than the Cadbury cream eggs. I will give them that. One Reese's peanut butter egg has 180 calories, and it only has 18 grams of carbs. So that's 10 less than the Cadbury cream egg. And it also has 1 gram of fiber, so that's 17 grams of usable carb. They also have 4 grams of protein, which no doubt comes from the peanut butter. So the Reese's peanut butter egg is somewhat less likely to send you into a blood sugar tailspin than some of the other candy you could be eating. Still, one can hardly call them health food. Then there are jelly beans. Cute, colorful jelly beans. Sweet, innocent-looking jelly beans. You know they're pure evil, right? Just 10 jelly beans have 41 calories with 10 grams of sugar. Since sugar has 4 calories per gram, that means the jelly beans are just about solid sugar. On the other hand, this makes counting jelly bean carbs quite easy. 1 bean, 1 gram. 2 beans, 2 grams. A couple of handfuls of beans, bye-bye daily carb limit. How about Peeps? What is it about Peeps, anyway? People are crazy about these things, and they've just never been a favorite of mine, even back during my days of being a sugar-crazed kid who would steal to get candy. I even know people who actually prefer Peeps stale and crunchy, and they'll buy up the half-price Peeps after Easter and age them for the next year, and now this year they'll be eating last year's Peeps, and next year they'll be eating this year's Peeps, and whatever. I find that really odd, but like I said, I was never a big Peeps fan. Peeps aren't as bad as they could be. That's not saying much, but still. They are mostly sugar, yep, but they're puffed up with air. Quite a lot of that volume of a Peep is made up of air. Now, according to the official Just Born Peeps website, a serving of Peeps is 5 Peeps. 5 Peeps! That strikes me as quite a lot of Peeps. It really does. Those 5 Peeps will have 160 calories and 40 grams of carbohydrate. 40 grams of carbohydrate. Once again, using our 4 calories per gram figure, we see that Peeps, like jelly beans, get virtually all of their calories from sugar. The gelatin in them does contribute a single gram of protein to those 5 Peeps, which leads me to believe that their calorie count is very slightly off, but whatever, it's not enough to bother calling the company about. All of this means, of course, that if you can bring yourself to eat just 1 Peep, you will get just 8 grams of carbohydrate. Now, that's not so awful, though, of course, there's no fat in that Peep to buffer the blood sugar impact. So if you have to have a Peep, and you can limit yourself to just the 1 lonely Peep and not eat the entire flock of Peeps, you'll do best to eat it after a meal when you've got a stomach full of protein and fat and stuff to minimize the blood sugar rush and crash. Still, can't really recommend the Peeps either. So let's talk about some better options. How about sugar-free Easter candy? Well, our sponsor, CarbSmart, has perfectly lovely low-carb Easter baskets waiting for you. They are for those of you who want to blow out the stops. They're big, beautiful Easter baskets loaded with everything from sugar-free chocolate to sugar-free jelly beans to sugar-free chocolate-coated marshmallows. So take a look at those at CarbSmart.com. We'll put a link up on the show page. But remember that virtually all sugar-free candy is sweetened with maltitol, and do yourself a favor. Don't try to eat all that candy in one day. Or even in 1 week, you will be sorry. You have been warned. Then there are sugar-free Reese's peanut butter cups. And for those of you who are a fan of the Reese's peanut butter egg, these are a pretty good substitute. Yeah, they're not egg-shaped. Big deal. They taste just like the sugary peanut butter cups. Indeed, they are something I keep in the house. and they would be my choice to replace the Reese's peanut butter eggs. Five sugar-free mini cups have 180 calories with 27 grams of carbohydrate. 6 grams of that is fiber. That leaves 21 grams of carbohydrate. And of that 21 grams, 20 are maltitol. This is not surprising. Again, most sugar-free candy is sweetened with maltitol. Now, I do not subscribe to the food industry notion that we can completely discount polyols, also known as sugar alcohols, from our carb counts. Indeed, of the polyols, maltitol is the one that is the most digested and the most absorbed. About half of the maltitol you eat will end up being absorbed into your system. It is absorbed somewhat more slowly than sugar, but about half of it is absorbed. Accordingly, I'd count half of the carbs in that sugar-free peanut butter cup, or really in any sugar-free candy. So for five sugar-free peanut butter cups, you would want to count about 10 grams of carb from maltitol, plus that one leftover gram, which I'm assuming is some carbohydrate that's inherent in the chocolate or the peanut butter. So 11 grams of usable carb in five Reese's sugar-free mini cups, although I generally eat only one or two because more than that will make me, again, socially offensive. You may find that local specialty candy stores have sugar-free chocolate Easter novelties, you know, the foil-wrapped bunnies, stuff like that. Assume that they will be maltitol sweetened. Again, most commercial sugar-free stuff is. And, of course, sugar-free chocolate bars are ubiquitous anymore. You can get them at Walgreens and CVS and Target and like that. So sugar-free chocolate bars are easy to get, although the really good ones you may have to look for. I repeat, my very favorite sugar-free chocolate bar is Valor 70% Dark, available through Amazon.com. It's something else. Then there are sugar-free jelly beans. Sugar-free jelly beans are available. However, keep this in mind. Just as regular jelly beans are little nuggets of solid sugar, sugar-free jelly beans will be little nuggets of solid maltitol. Far, far more maltitol per bite than sugar-free chocolate or sugar-free peanut butter cups, which, of course, have chocolate and peanut butter in them as well as maltitol. So consider sugar-free jelly beans to simply be particularly tasty laxative tablets. The Jelly Bean site indeed warns us against eating more than 8 of their sugar-free beans at a time. There are now also sugar-free Peeps available. And again, our sponsor CarbSmart has the sugar-free Peeps. You'll want to go easy on them for the same reason that you want to go easy on all the maltitol sweetened candy. Because you're going to be really, really unpopular at Easter dinner if you load up on these things on Easter morning, if you know what I mean, and I think you do. But still, there are sugar-free Peeps. No word as to whether they get crunchy when they get stale the way the sugary ones do. If anybody wanted to do an experiment, they could report back next year. Now, if y'all can just avoid loading up on potatoes and rolls and stuff at Easter dinner, you should be just fine. And I hope it's a lovely holiday. We'll be talking more about this kind of thing as the season progresses. Me, I'm going to watch the Ten Commandments again. Okay, in a few minutes, we're going to have another episode of Low Carb Voices. But first, I think it's important to talk about the whole concept of risk factors. Not any specific risk factors, but rather the whole concept of risk factors and what exactly that term means. We hear about risk factors all the time. It's mentioned in drug ads. It's mentioned in articles in popular magazines. So, you know, for example, we're told that high cholesterol is a risk factor for heart disease. So what exactly does that mean? Does it mean that having high cholesterol will give us heart disease or is more likely to give us heart disease and lowering it will prevent heart disease? No, it doesn't mean that. That's not what the term risk factor means. A risk factor is simply something that correlates with the thing that you're trying to avoid, with the ill health condition that you're trying to avoid. To quote Wikipedia, in epidemiology, a risk factor is a variable associated with an increased risk of disease or infection. Risk factors are correlational and not necessarily causal, because correlation does not imply causation. Let me repeat that last statement, because it's one of the most important concepts in science and one that is very, very often ignored. Correlation is not causation. Just because two things happen together does not mean that one is causing the other. Let me give you my favorite illustration of this very important concept, and you'll get it right away. In every elementary school, pretty much in the whole world, you will find that overall, the children with the biggest feet will be the best spellers. Now, does that mean that if your daughter has inherited your teeny-weeny size 5 feet, she's doomed to a lifetime of relying on spell check as well as buying all of her shoes by mail order? No, that's not what it means. You have to ask why the kids with the biggest feet are overall the best spellers. And the answer is, of course, that at the elementary school level, children are growing. And so the kids with the biggest feet are overall the oldest children and have had the most practice with spelling. The two things occur together, but one is not causing the other. Furthermore, even if one thing is causing another, simple correlation doesn't tell you which way that causality goes. It doesn't tell you which thing is causing the other one. Interestingly, low total cholesterol is associated with an increased risk of cancer, something that the people who are pushing statins very rarely mention. Now, I have seen it suggested both that low cholesterol makes us more susceptible to cancer, but also the possibility that perhaps something about having cancer lowers blood cholesterol, or it could be some third factor that's affecting both. Maybe there's some chemical pollutant that lowers cholesterol and causes cancer. We just don't know. We only know the two things happen together. Now, all of this does not mean that there aren't risk factors that are causal. Often they are. High blood pressure, for instance, is a risk factor for all sorts of things, and I myself am pretty sure that it does damage all by itself. Same thing with high blood sugar. I just wanted you to know that the words risk factor do not necessarily mean this thing causes that disease. They don't. Okay. It's time for Low Carb Voices. Today, we're going to hear from Kelly in Pasadena, who has a really terrific suggestion after having listened to last week's show.
Hi, Dana. This is Kelly from Pasadena, California. And I have a recommendation. You, in your last podcast, you answered a question from a caller who was asking about cholesterol, and you recommended Uffe Ravenscott's book, The Cholesterol Myths. You may want to check out his new book. It's called Ignore the Awkward. It's sort of a rewrite for average people of the cholesterol myths in the way that Gary Taubes redid Good Calories, Bad Calories. I think it's called Why We Get Fat and What to Do About It. I tried to read The Cholesterol Myths a few years ago, and I loved the information, but it was very scientific. But Ignore the Awkward is absolutely wonderful, very accessible, and he has a lot of humor in it, too. So I very highly recommend that. Thanks, Dana. I love your podcast. I love all your cookbooks, and I've been a low-carber for 30 years, and I'm so glad I found you and the internet support. Thanks.
Woohoo! 30 years. Did you hear that? She's been low carb.